Blog Talk Radio.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Welcome to this edition of Hustle and Flows. It's Marcus in the house with my man Sekou, and we are bringing you hip-hop and sports on a whole nother level, part of the Real Sports Guys Network, Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. This is a new addition to the Renegade Real Sports Guys platform. Sekou and myself talking hip-hop, blending in some sports talk. But this is mostly a music show, folks. So we got another 60 minutes of funk in store for you. Sorry, Funk Flex. I had to borrow that for a second. I'll give it back. We're going to get it going. Sekou, my man, you're in the house tonight. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. I am missing the New York Knickerbockers taking on the 76ers of Philadelphia game right now. But I'm taping it, and I'm hoping that's a W. If not, man, I'll be depressed. So, spirits right now.
Okay, you're a Knicks fan?
Oh, yeah. Come on. New York, born and bred. There was only one team when I grew up, so I'm a Knicks fan for better or for worse. Mainly for worse the last 20 years, but for better or for worse.
Okay. How is the city embracing the whole Brooklyn Nets kind of deal? Is that like, how is that going so far? I know it's still in its infancy as far as sports fandom goes, but how is that vibe kind of rolling with New Yorkers?
It's funny. I think it's kind of a separated family. So, like, my dad is now diehard Brooklyn Nets fan. And, you know, I just can't understand it. I think because the Knicks have been so bad for so long that there are a lot of folks in Brooklyn that just were ready for a change. The problem for me, and, you know, I had a lot of crisis around this, trying to figure out what I'm going to do. It came down to, I just don't like the Nets. If they had built a brand new team from scratch and drafted it, then it would have been really tough. But they just took a team that I already despised and just moved them to Brooklyn. So I literally just cannot stand them. And I love Brooklyn. I've wanted a team in there my whole life. I'm from Brooklyn, and that's not the case. So what you find are just a split. So the borough split. People will root for the Nets. But most diehard Knicks fans have, like, doubled down on their Knickdom because of this threat. And so it's tough. It's tough rooting against a team that has Brooklyn on its shirt, but I do it.
Gotcha. So how'd you feel about Porzingis when the Knicks picked him up in the draft?
Oh, well, you know, privately or publicly? I was kind of wait and see. I really wanted once we were out of the top three and we couldn't get Towns, I was all in for Towns, all in for Okafor. And D'Angelo Russell I thought was interesting, but Porzingis I was kind of just like, I don't know. And but I said, okay, maybe, and I have been pleasantly surprised. I wasn't booing him. I wasn't saying, oh, this is the worst pick ever. But I was nervous. I mean, I'm still nervous. I mean, the dude is about $1.50 with two bricks in his pocket. but he's got heart and he really is skilled, and he could be a monster if he improves and gets bigger and gets strong, and all those things could happen, but he could also, you know, hurt his foot and be Greg Oden. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, that's always the downside of tall human beings playing basketball, man, is that those lower extremities, you know, those ankles, those feet, knees, they can be real, real fragile down there, man. They get hurt, and it can be a problem, and it can never go away. So if you've ever listened to any of our Real Sports Guys Sports Center shows, you know I was a big fan of Greg Oden, thought he was the next deal, man. And was sad to see that brother's story go that way. So I hope Porzingis, I like him. I think he's got some talent. I didn't know what to think of him coming out because I hadn't seen him play. And I try to refrain from judging dudes I haven't seen play because there's a lot of dudes, especially some of the Euro cats, I just haven't seen him play. So I can't say I like him or don't like him. I don't really care what you do in a room with a workout and a trainer. That's not basketball.
This is true. And the fact that he got hurt in that shoot-around. Like, he hurt his hip in the shoot-around. I was like, oh, I don't know about this. This dude can't even run up and down without hurting his hip flexor. I was nervous.
Right.
But, amongst, dedicated Knicks fans, I'm on a couple of these group chats. I mean, there's still cats that are banging for Moutier. I think Winslow would have been better. So time will tell.
Absolutely. And that's always the case with draft picks. You never know for about 3 years. Sometimes you can tell right away. Like Carl Anthony Towns, that's a hit. You know, that's a swing and a home run. You know what I mean? And, but then you got guys like D'Angelo Russell where I still don't know what that cat's going to be. So you never really know. But, again, this is a hip-hop show. You know, we got off on a little tangent. I just had to, got to get to know my man. Me personally, I'm kind of leaning towards, I grew up in Chicago, but I grew up in Chicago during the Jordan era. And so as a kid, it was just hard for me to root for the Bulls. Like, I wasn't a front runner. And so, I've never been a front runner. And so the Bulls were great. They never lost. But that also made it boring to root for them because they always won. And so I was just kind of like, they're going to win, man. They're going to win. So I never really became a Bulls fan. I appreciate everything they did. I was not a hater, but I just never developed that, like, voracious fandom for the Bulls. So I've kind of been as far as the NBA goes, I've kind of been a free agent. So I'm hitching my wagon up to this group of young Milwaukee Bucks, and I think I'm going to jump in on that. Since I've been in Wisconsin the last 22 years, I'm going to go with the home state team, and the Bucks finally, like, they figured out how to run a team, how to build a roster. So I'm looking to see how this goes. It's been shaky this year, but they still got some things to figure out as far as chemistry. But they got pieces. So I'm interested to see how it plays out. I'm gonna go along for the ride with this one. So that's why I'm with my fandom.
All right. Well, Milwaukee, I think you're buying low, which is good. And they have some pieces that I like. But Jason Kidd, I'm not sold on him. And I loved him as a Knick, but I'm not sold that he's the guy that can get you there. But we'll see.
That was a real questionable hire to me when they hired him. And last year he did some good stuff with the team, and I was really, really surprised. I was really, really surprised. Like, I was totally on the other side. I was where you are. Jason Kidd is our head coach. Come on. Like, this ain't going to work. Like, you guys took him from Brooklyn. Great. That was really smart. They didn't want him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I wasn't in on it, but he did some good stuff last year. We'll see what he does this year and if he can keep it going into the future. Sometimes guys run their course really quickly. We'll see. But enough of that. Enough of the sports talk. We're going to kind of cross over back into the sports world in a little bit. But this is the hip-hop show. You got two heads here, and we want to talk hip-hop. We're going to kick this show off. We threw the question out as we were prepping for the show. Which album from each decade best represents that decade of hip-hop, And we just left it at that. Each of us kind of will probably have our own kind of criteria for how we chose the albums that we chose. But we're looking at the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and now the teens, 2010 era and beyond. So Sekou, I'm going to let you go first. Starting off in the 80s, which album did you select as the most representative album of that decade of hip-hop?
All right. So first, let me state, this is just an impossible task. You might not be in charge of figuring out the questions anymore, because this one, I have a list. I mean, the 80s was actually easy compared to the 90s. The 90s is just impossible. But all right, we'll get there. The 80s, pretty much how I made my selection is thinking about albums that were not only good, but really made an impact on the whole genre of hip hop in a way that was felt years after, right? And so, with the assumption that each decade was meaningful, right? There wasn't any throwaway decade where the best album from that decade doesn't matter. So every decade matters for hip hop because it's so young. And so, all right, which album had the most impact? So I was primarily driven by impact in making these decisions. All right, so 80s, it came down to three albums for me. And, I had two transitions in the 80s. The first is moving from the hip-hop as very much, the original way of rapping, which was very sing-songy and basic rhyme patterns. And it transitioned from that to what you have, I think, what you call the modern or the golden age, where the craft of putting words together ended up, it became much more lyrical. And for that, the album that I think makes that leap is Paid in Full. So Paid in Full, which came out in 1987, I thought was I put as prototypical for the 80s. And the reason is because I think the big takeaway from the 80s, if you look at how people rapped going in and how they rapped going out, it was way more lyrical. It was way more about the words that you're saying and how you're putting them together, and less about, a disco beat. And Paid in Full, Rakim, and, him taking that and making being lyrical cool and hard and dope or whatever, fresh, however you want to put it, was big. So for me, gun to my head, it was Paid in Full.
Okay. I like that selection. That was my – the 80s was – again, I agree with you. I feel like the 80s were easy. The 90s was extremely, extremely hard for me. That was really difficult. But the 80s, Paid in Full was my second kind of runner-up. My choice was Boogie Down Productions, Criminally Minded, and that came out in 87. And the reason I chose that one was similarly to yours. It represented that shift lyrically. As you said, from more simplistic, hit it on the four bars, and, let it breathe for a second, and then come with another four bars, let it breathe for a second, kind of stylistic as far as lyrics go. But the reason I chose that one is because it began to combine the different impulses within hip-hop that existed at the time. So it was conscious, but it was street. It was lyrical, but it was also confrontational, and there were battle songs on it. There was beef on the album, and so you had all of these elements that were at the core of the emceeing game of hip hop, the musical side of hip hop, that were encompassed in one album. Where you had street records, it had a street feel. It was definitely speaking about the experience of inner city youth. Through the voice of KRS-One, but it was also confrontational in that way that hip-hop at that time was confrontational with The Bridges Over and South Bronx and songs like that. But then it was also reflective and introspective with songs like Poetry. So it really kind of encompassed all of that, but it still kept in a very street and grounded in what was going on with a hard edge to it. And so it kind of really set the tone, I think, for what, to me, what the 80s represented with hip-hop, is that you had all these different kind of impulses that were melding around the scene, the cultural scene, that were then reflected in one album. And that's the album that kind of, again, took and I agree with you, we're paid in full. And that's why I gave paid in full so much consideration, is because, as you said, it provided that kind of marking point where this is different, you know. Mm-hmm. And Criminally Minded kind of took that and really kind of encompassed the cultural impulses that were reverberating through hip-hop at that time, in my opinion. And I felt like it was a real evolutionary album that really kind of captured the context and the complexities of the context of that era, all in one, you know, set of songs. So that's why I kind of chose Criminally Minded. But I agree with you that Paid in Full, and Paid in Full is one of my favorite albums, period, regardless of era. I really enjoy that record, front to back. Front to back, that's an album that I really enjoy. But I chose Criminally Minded because I feel like it just had that mix of all of those different things. When you think of the culture, the style of the 80s, it kind of encompassed all of those things that hip-hop was.
So let me push back a little on this, or ask you a question better yet. So why then, so what would you say if I said, well, if you're going to take that angle, then how does Public Enemy get left out? It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Because that, if Criminally Minded kind of brought things together, it was the first attempt. It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, like, exploded it across genres. You know, it was a national kind of movement. And obviously Public Enemy ended up being, I don't even think it's, maybe it's up for debate. I think Public Enemy ended up having a larger impact than Boogie Down Production did. And they both, obviously, they're legends. And KRS had kind of his own thing. But Chuck D, it Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold It Back. So what would you say? Why not that one? If the route you're going is pulling together the conscious and kind of the battle rap and the angry and the militant, why not P.E.?
KRS is a better rapper than Chuck D. That's what it boiled down to for me. Because It Takes a Millions was my number three. So, like, you're hitting my top three right here. And the reason I kind of went with Criminally Minded is because I feel like KRS, lyrically, was more, I think, a beat ahead of Chuck D. With Chuck D, they had an energy. They had a vibe that they were bringing. His lyrics were poignant, but his rapping wasn't amazing. You know what I mean? And yeah. I feel like as an MC, KRS had that same level of energy. Maybe not, and I agree. I think Public Enemy had a greater impact than BDP for sure. But I think when you talk about, like, the essence of, like, an MC, if I'm taking an MC, I'm taking KRS over Chuck D every day. As far as the art of MCing. And so that's why I chose BDP over PE in that particular situation, because it did come down to, like, okay, so – and I was having that kind of debate in my head. So, like, okay, so It Takes a Million versus Criminally Minded. And it really did come down to, but which one was tighter on the mic? And it's a LeBron, Kobe, you know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady kind of an argument. But one of them's got to be the best, right? I can't top out and say they're tied. So if I got to pick one, I'm picking KRS.
All right, I can. All right, I'm willing to go along with that. I would have put It Takes a Nation, but I might be biased by my own kind of allegiance to Public Enemy. But
I dig it.
And where'd you put Straight Outta Compton?
Straight Outta Compton, you know, I feel like there was
too late.
It was late, and I felt like it wasn't when I think of the 80s, when I think of 80s hip hop, I don't think Straight Outta Compton. I think something coming out of New York, straight up. I think something coming out of New York, and New York was the epicenter of hip hop at that time. And I know it was a earth shattering release, and it was highly impactful. But when I'm thinking about it, when I'm just general thinking 80s hip hop, I'm thinking something New York centered. And so I kind of gravitated away from Straight Outta Compton, because when I think of the hip hop aesthetic of the 80s as a decade, I had to pick something from New York because New York influenced everybody else at that particular point. So
you won't get an argument out of me on that.
Yeah. Well, how did that fit into your kind of framework and your rationale when you were thinking about your what other albums did you give consideration to?
Yeah, so my top four, so Criminally Minded was there. It was three. I had Paid in Full. I had actually Straight Outta Compton 2. Then I'm sorry, It Takes a Nation Million to Hold Us Back 2. Then three was Criminally Minded, and four was Straight Outta Compton. The problem with Straight Outta Compton is, if we're really being honest about it, that best represents the 90s, even though it came out in the 80s.
Right.
So, you know, it, because, you know, it was such a drastic break from all these other albums that came out in the 80s, it just was, you know, dramatically different, and it doesn't represent the 80s by any stretch, but it does bleed all into 1990, 91, 92. I mean, up until, you know, 94, really, 95, I think, you know, N.W.A., Straight Outta Compton, like that, quote-unquote gangster rap or whatever, was kind of a bigger. So that, for me, it ended up being like, it's impactful, but it's not representative of the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, and that was kind of sentiment I had as well. Let's transition and talk about the 90s a little bit. Now, you kind of talked about how difficult this was for you. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So I have 12 albums on my list. I'm not even going to talk about all of them. It is, I mean, I just got to a point where I was like, I don't even know. I can't leave this off. I was just putting albums that I was like, I have to at least see this album. I know it can't be number one, but if I make a list and it's not on it, I'll feel like I have done a disservice to somebody. So, you know, the 90s, that's my decade. That's my favorite decade, far and away. And I think you had two or three eras and branches developing at the same time that were all impactful. And so, you know, if you said, well, what represents best 90s backpack rap or best 90s, quote-unquote gangster rap, or what, you know, the 90s had the whole bling era come in and all these things. So it was just a mess for me trying to figure out which of these best represents a decade that I think has three different personalities, like distinct and meaningful, and each of those have bled into following decades. And so, you know, picking one was particularly tough in the 90s.
I agree. And again, this was the era where I really became like a consumer of hip hop. And I had the same difficulty because you're right. It does have this split personality, and you're right. You know, and for the sake of my own sanity, I didn't even create a list. I kind of wrote some things down, and I was like, okay, I'm picking one. Because if I would have created a list, I would still be trying to figure it out now. Because I just would have gotten so mixed up in my own thoughts about, and then my own personal feelings about how I felt about certain releases. You know what I mean? And so I had to avoid that and just kind of say, this is what I'm looking for. Where is it? And so that's kind of how I went about it. But you're right. You know, as I kind of looked at it, like you have the early 90s, which, you know, I think you're right. The Straight Outta Compton played a major role in influencing that and bringing kind of those gangster rap tones into the game. But then you also had still a very strong presence of Native Tongues, Public Enemy, folks like that who were providing a more quote-unquote conscious vibe to the game in the early 90s. And then, you know, I think the mid-90s, you had a real strong, you know, push back to kind of the gangster rap impulses that had been kind of established. And you had the underground scene that really kind of grew into it was always there, but it kind of grew into a viable breeding ground for semi-mainstream artists. you know, where you had, you know, yeah. Raucous, groups like that, that were kind of, labels like that, that were kind of bubbling up. You had, you know, the BBC, Boot Camp Click, guys like that, groups like that, that were kind of bubbling up, that were more rugged, Wu-Tang, you know, that kind of impulse in the mid-90s. And then in the late-90s, you know, and you have Puffy and his bling rap and those guys coming in, but then you also have the South coming in
yeah.
and beginning to establish itself as a force. And, you know, the late-90s kind of bleeds into the early 2000s. So it's just a really, really eclectic decade that is really hard to pinpoint. And I think it symbolizes kind of the breaking of the expansion, right? It's like the expansion era of hip hop, where
yeah.
different regions are bringing their own flavor, and they had a platform and there was access, and it really kind of took the game in a lot of different places really quickly, which is a beautiful thing. But when you're trying to do a list,
impossible.
It makes it very difficult. So what did you settle on?
So after making this really long list and hemming and hawing, it occurred to me I was really trying to pick what I thought was the best, and I really need to pick what was most representative. So if I could only allow someone to listen to one album, and that album had to capture the entire decade, it became pretty clear to me what that album had to be, and in part because it's a double album. And in part because it's arguably the greatest rapper to ever live. Notorious B.I.G., Life After Death, 1997, to me was the selection that best represents the decade. And the reason that is, and the list of what, I won't even get into it, but it's South, it's, you know, it's West, it's everything, it's everybody. It's that in that album, and part of the reason that made Biggie so great is, he really tried to make an album that captured the entire country. So he had people like the Lox, who were underground, quote-unquote gangster rap, et cetera, on there. He had Puff on there. He had Jay-Z on there. He had, you know, soulful R&B stuff. So the other part of the 90s that you can't forget is that's when, like, the R&B rap collabo pretty much was invented, right, where, you know, it became – if you were a rap artist, you had to have your song with Mary J. Blige or somebody. So he had that. He had, you know, he had pretty much everyone on there. And then, of course, you know, bringing in Too Short on a song and bringing in Bone Thugs on a song and pretty much saying, like I can rap the way everyone raps. And all this music, all these producers, all the ways to make a song, I think are represented on Life After Death. And for that reason, primarily – is why I chose that one as the pick for the 90s.
Okay. I'm not. I understand your rationale. I went in a different direction. The thing that I would say is, like, right. So when we talk about representative, yes, that is representative. Absolutely, I think that is representative. I don't know if it was a marker, though. I don't know if I think it was a product of its era for sure, and it represented its era, but I don't know if it shifted or changed anything, so to speak. But I agree with, I can live with your rationale. I can't. I didn't see it as representative. And when I explain mine, maybe it'll make more sense why I didn't. What
All
are
right.
others you consider?
Okay, so Into the Wu-Tang was a big one because just off impact, to have this group come in rapping a completely different way than everyone ever else did, bringing kind of the imagery and allegory and all those things that they brought in, plus having all these characters, and I think Wu-Tang changed the way people thought about what a group and what a collective was, what a label could do, how to market it. They changed the business of hip-hop. But then also they launched not only Wu-Tang, but then three or four other Hall of Fame-level careers. and you know, you could see it all on that album. So Into the Woo was up there, Doggy Style was up there, and then it gets hairy at that point. Then you have stuff like AT Aliens, you have Death Certificate, Ice Cube, which came out in 91, which I think epitomizes kind of the bleed over from the 80s to the 90s. I put that on there. Dre 2001, which came out in 99, it was kind of then I'm like, well, this does kind of really capture. If you think about who he had on that album, he had everybody on that album. I mean, that was West Coast, you know, boiled into one album. And, you know, if anything about, you know, the West Coast, so if you feel like that was the decade where West Coast really kind of made a name for itself and developed its full identity, then that album, I think, deserves some consideration. And then Low End Theory, Resurrection. I mean, it's, I'm not going to go through this list. There's
yeah, it gets thick. It gets, it's a rabbit
yeah.
hole.
Yeah.
And again, that was something that element of the collaboration is something that I really, really struggled with, because that was a major, major part of that era. As far as, like, you know, there was a time where you want to know who else was on the album more so than whose
yeah.
album it was. You wanted to
yep.
see, well, who did they do songs with, you know? And
yep.
I understand why you went with Biggie's, because that was a big part of that project. It was his collaboration. And you're right, he did try to craft an album that really encompassed and could hit people nationwide, you know,
mm-hmm.
With a lot of different styles and sounds that were on there. The album I chose...
So what'd you pick?
And,
yeah, it's a suspense here. What'd you pick?
Yeah, the reason I chose the album is because, again, as I started to make this list, again, I got, you know, a lot of the ones you named, AT Aliens, Into the Wu-Tang, All Eyes on Me with Tupac. I mean, just album after album where I'm like, yo, how am I going to do this? And for me, what it boiled down to is which... And I kind of took the approach you took in the 80s. It's which one kind of is the marker that set the tone and said, this is the 90s. We are in the 90s, and y'all got to do this different.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was the Chronic. When I think of 90s style, 90s aesthetics, 90s music, It again kind of went away from more of the minimalist style of the 80s and kind of early 90s, and really brought kind of a more full sound into hip hop, and that put meat on the bones sonically, and that meat, you had to have the meat on your bones in the 90s as far as the production, and that has evolved over time, where now it kind of went back the other way, where, you know, for a while it was in vogue to be more minimalist, but in the 90s you had to layer stuff and you had to have stuff going on underneath the track and the drums had to be thick. And that album kind of set that up. And it also, you know, again, just generally thinking, when you think about a rapper in the 90s, you get that image of, you think the West Coast. I mean, you think, socks, caps, you know what I mean? Dickies, khakis, kind of a deal when you think about the 90s rapper. And I think for me, that album was that marker where at that point it was like, yeah, this is different now. Things are different. In the same way that Paid in Full was like, yo, it's different now. And we got to do this a little different. So that was the one that for me kind of marked it. The other one that I gave a lot of consideration to was Biggie's other album, and that one was Ready to Die. And the reason that one kind of hit me was, again, when you think of the image of a 90s rapper, you got that West Coast kind of look, and then you got that East Coast player, kind of Gambino-ish kind of vibe that was going on in the 90s, and Biggie was the dude. Mm-hmm. And he was lyrical. And, you know, that album, Ready to Die, it was a journey through the existence and the mind of a young African-American male in the inner cities of New York. And, you know, telling that story, it was hard not to give that consideration because of the impact of just how he set that album up as his story. Everything from, you know, everyday struggle to, you know, the what, give me the loot. And then, again, the birth of the R&B collabo with One More Chance, which turned into a mega hit, you know. So, but then you had like songs like Unbelievable, where he's just going at people and going off on people. You know what I mean? And so it's just, it was kind of the beta of the rap album formula that kind of took over on the East Coast, where you got your battle track, you got your R&B joint, you got a couple hard street joints, you kind of got your introspective, you know, reflective, you know, lay your struggles out mm-hmm. kind of a joint. And so it kind of really was, you know, patient zero for that those stylings, at least in my opinion. So those were the two that got the most consideration. Being an Outkast fan, ATLian was something that I considered. Wu-Tang was something I considered. But those were so original and so different that it was hard to put them as representative because they were so unique in that way. And there were a lot of albums that I really enjoyed and really gave consideration to that were, it was like, but that took it this way and that took it. So what's the one that's like right there that's kind of representing everything? So that's why I kind of, the Chronic was the one that I kind of settled on. Have at me.
No, I mean, I just don't think, I thought that Doggy Style was more impactful, and this is coming from an East Coast guy. Like, the Chronic came out and it was like, okay, but at that point, Ice Cube had pretty much established he was the alpha dog, in my view. And Dre mm-hmm. was good, but, you know, when it came down to it, and Cube said, all right, I'm going to put something on Wax, and I dare you to come test it, that he had nothing to say. I mean, NWA just fell apart. And so Dre emerged from that, and I saw the Chronic as kind of being like, okay, you know, but I really still didn't believe him. Like, he needed more people. And when Snoop came on with Doggy Style, it, like, I couldn't, and, you know, I'm in the midst of picking sides. That's the other thing about, you know, in the 90s, like, you couldn't just like an artist. You had to say, well, am I messing with that guy and who he runs with and what he represents, and am I feeling them? And I wasn't feeling Dre, because when NWA split, you had to pick. Were you with NWA and Easy and Dre, or were you with Cube? And I rolled with Cube, you know, till the wheels fell off. So it took me a while to warm back up to Dre, but that Doggy Style album was like, you, even if you didn't like anything West Coast, like, you couldn't hate on that. Even when they started beefing East-West, I still had to rock, you know, had to knock Doggy Style. So it's not that I don't think Dre, and I don't think in that realm he kind of, you know, was that, like, would you say pivot point, would you call it?
Yeah, kind of the marker, right?
The marker. Yeah, so not that I don't think he was a marker. I just think the marker came a year later with Doggy Style. And the Chronic was, I mean, the Chronic is good. Chronic's a classic. But what really made folks say, like, oh, man, this whole Death Row, you know, funk, you know, sound, like, this is not just a flash in the pan. This is going to stay. Because remember when the Cube left NWA, he ended up going with PE's production folks, whose name's escaping me at the moment, the Bomb Squad.
Bomb Squad.
Right. So he went to he kind of moved away from the same production that Dre had and was doing more almost like Public Enemy style kind of production around his songs. And so it was hard, it was fast, it was rat-a-tat, you know, a lot of lyrics, you know, it was very lyrical. And but Dre, you know, kept with what he believed and obviously ended up being the genius that he is. So the only disagreement I have is I think I would put Doggy Style ahead of The Chronic for, you know, as a quality. And again, because Snoop is a better rapper, the same thing you use for the 80s, Snoop is a better rapper than Dre. So that makes Doggy Style has to be, you know, stylistically a better listen than The Chronic was.
I can dig that. Yeah, again, the 90s were hard for me. That was a challenge. That was a challenge. I think that's the toughest decade to do. The other ones I didn't have much problem with. The 90s, though, and I think because there was just so much, there was so much emotional attachment to certain albums, and you know what I mean. Like, at one point I was thinking about this. I found myself, well, can I sneak Camp Low in here?
Oh boy! If you would have done that, man, this podcast would have been over.
I know. I talked myself out of it, but that's how deep I got. They're like, but that was hot, man. That was so hot. You know, Uptown Saturday Night was nice. You know what I mean? But yeah. So it was like I said, I had to kind of just take a step back from the exercise and kind of breathe.
Yeah.
So let's transition into the first decade of the 21st century, the aughts.
Yeah.
The early 2000s. What was your rationale as you combed through? What was the process like for you as you combed through the early part of this decade, or this century, rather?
It was... Really, there were some real kind of careers that took off in the aughts. And so it was kind of deciding, like, okay, is this person's debut album, was that more impactful than this person's debut album and what they brought in? And then there's one or two classic, like Mount Rushmore albums that came out in the aughts that deserve some kind of consideration. But really, this was a pretty easy one for me. There's a lot of good ones here that I'm willing to talk about, but it would take a lot to get me to go off of my number one choice.
Okay. Yeah. For me, this was a pretty simple one for me to get down to. And I came down to two, and they were both two kind of off the same tree. And, you know, I like you said, there was some great debuts. And then there was some really, like you said, some real classic joints that had come out. But it was really I kind of narrowed it down real fast to where I wanted to go. So what did you wind up picking?
Blueprint.
Yeah.
Jay-Z, yeah. Blueprint, 2001. I mean, it's his opus, and it was kind of a hearkening back to really, as much, you know, for all the beef that he had with Nas, I thought the Blueprint was his Illmatic. It was a clean, simple, not a lot of features. It's me, my thoughts, my ideas, and, you know, just production is insane. And there's just not a bad song. Not only is there not a bad song, every single song is good. And then you have like three or four just great songs. And so... Blueprint literally established, in my view, Jay-Z as the guy who pretty much moved trends for the entire decade. People came in and people did things, but at all times, he was pretty much the king of the whole deal. And it was off the strength of him being able to put something together like the Blueprint that really no one could touch, you know, except Nas with Ether. But, you know, aside from that, it was a beyond reproach. So I put Blueprint as the number one.
Yeah, I went Blueprint as well. Again, it wasn't a very difficult choice. I gave some consideration to Get Rich or Die Trying. I gave some consideration to The College Dropout. But ultimately, when you stack up those two against Blueprint, it's a second round knockout.
I mean, it's like you know, it's this issue of the timing of it, right? And so so I'm in the midst of finishing finally Bill Simmons' book about the book of basketball. And he just talks in that book where he ranks literally every single NBA player. And he talks about that, how, you know, this guy was good, but just, you know, he was in the Jordan era. Like, it didn't matter how good he was. He wasn't going to beat the best. You know, this guy was good, but, you know, that was when Kareem was at his apex. Like, it just wasn't happening. You couldn't get out of, you know, the West with, you know, the Lakers and Kareem. So that's how I felt with Get Rich or Die Trying. College Dropout, because he kind of was put on by Jay-Z, he was always little brother, right? So it was almost as if Jay-Z got credit for the College Dropout release, you know, as well. And then, you know, in the late aughts is when you have the Young Money, Cash Money kind of coming out, right? So the Carters were dropping. So I guess Carter 3 is what I put there as kind of maybe his, for that 10-year period, probably the one that epitomized, that was for me the masterpiece that he put together. And his albums were kind of all good, but I think 3 was the one, that was in 08. But I don't know if I go so far as to say, like, okay, that was the representative of this decade. I don't see it that way. So that's why once I started going on the list, Machiavelli, that also came out in 2001. But that was probably still influencing more, you know, that was an influential album, but wasn't, because he was gone already. It was like, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's over. Right. So people enjoyed it, but it wasn't as if they were like, oh man, what's in store? And this guy's the greatest. It was kind of like, oh man, I really wish he didn't get killed. So, So I think those were my big ones.
Excellent. Yeah. And for me, you know, college, like you said, College Dropout, again, I felt like, you know, because I had just finished college when that came out. And having friends who were still in school, like, they were bugging out over that album because it spoke so much to their experiences and things that they were going through at that time and experiencing at that time. And so, like, that, you know, I had to get past that, because I also remember when Blueprint came out and we were bugging out in the dorms for months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, I was in college when that came out. And again, just it totally changed how in that decade kind of approached putting together their albums. I think it kind of shifted things again away from heavy collabo, you know, which was the norm up until that point. And he kind of stepped away from that and was, as you said, it's like, this is me, a very clear, concise, you know, my thoughts, laying them out, great production, and kind of really shifted things at that point. So, and then Get Rich or Die Trying really kind of probably was the one that I kind of got stuck on the most, just because of how 50 and the mixtape scene, and how 50 really influenced, like, the game from that perspective of marketing, the mixtapes, the fake beef, and that aspect of creating a persona, and, you know, the fake beef manufactured angst was a big part of that era.
Reality star. Reality rap star. Yeah,
and so 50 kind of brought that to the forefront, but I just didn't feel it was all-encompassing. Because Jay had beef on his, and his was authentic beef, and his was well-executed. You know what I mean? So, you know, when you talk about the Blueprint, you had the Takeover, Song Cry. You know, just the diversity of, you know, H to the Izzo, just the diversity of songs on there, you know, Never Change, Heart of the City. I mean, just on and on and on. Like you said, there isn't really a bad song on there. So that's the one I had to settle on as well. But I did give strong consideration to Get Rich or Die Trying just because it definitely impacted other rappers and shifted their formula of how they were going to go about making themselves big, right?
Yep.
Who can I knock, who can I start a beef with to make a name for myself? How many mixtapes can I release, you know, this month? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that aspect of the game I think was impactful and was significant, but I couldn't put it as a piece of art and as encompassing and representative, I couldn't put it above Blueprint. So as we move on to the teens, again, this one, we're halfway through. So this is obviously a decade that will be amended at some point, but in these 5 years, again, I think things we've experienced some shifts and some shuffling of who's at the top of the game and what the game is about and you know, where things are at. So tell me about your thought process as you begin to think about the first 5 years of the teens.
Yeah, this was pretty easy. One, because it's recent. And two, because I have been kind of writing about, you know, what I think the best albums for the last couple of years have been. So, you know, I literally had my thoughts still on paper that I could, like, refer to. And at the end of the day, since it's only halfway through, I just thought, okay, who is the person who has influenced the game as we know it for the last 5 years? And I really only think there's one answer.
Right.
And it's Drake. Yeah. And so it's like, okay, well, So Far Gone came out in 2008. So I was tempted to say, like, well, really, honestly, that might have been the most influential album for this current 5 years, because it kind of established the kind of music he was going to make. It was immensely popular. It drew in guys and it drew in ladies. And he's pretty much just built on that. But if I had to pick one that was released in 2010, I would say Thank Me Later probably is the most representative for these, you know, this half a decade.
Okay. That's not a bad choice. I also went with Drake. I picked a different album, though. I picked Nothing Was the Same. And the reason I went with Nothing Was the Same is I feel like, you know, I think he found he hit his stride with that one. From the intro to Pound Cake, the last song, I just felt like he hit his stride. He was able to do him. He found an edge that I think lyrically people could respect. I think, to me, that's his best lyrical album as far as just straight getting after it on the mic. Yeah. I feel like he brought it the most on that one, but he still had his signature sing-songy, you know, songs for the ladies, right? He still had that vibe. But I thought he found that perfect match on that album of how to kind of still have some of his streetness with Worse Behavior, you know, songs like that that kind of let him still not be so viewed as so soft.
Yeah. So was that 2012?
That was 2013.
2011? 2013. Okay.
2013. Yep. Yeah, so that one.
I was not a fan of Nothing Was the Same. Actually the flip side of the reason you just stated, I would have preferred if his stride was Thank Me Later. Then I would have been like, okay, I can mess with this dude. The fact that his stride ended up being a little more on the emo with Nothing Was the Same made me kind of be like, oh, you can do better. That's when it really got frustrated me, because I knew, I was like, you have lyrics. You can rap. I know you can. Why do you have really bad songs? Like, really bad songs. Like, like ungodly
what
bad.
What songs don't
like,
you
I have
on
to,
this?
Oh, man. I'm trying to even think of them now. I honestly make, I'll now when Drake albums come out, I take them and I put them in a playlist without those songs. So I've been listening to my version of of that album. But anyone where he's just singing.
Yeah.
Anyone where he's just singing and it's slow and he's trying to do his Usher, Chris Brown thing. Yeah, I'm out. I'm all the way out on that.
Yeah, so furthest thing, I think, is probably one you probably don't like too much. the Wu-Tang Forever one, maybe.
How dare... Okay, come on. Like, that is... That's just... That's he understands the game. You can't put Wu-Tang in a title. No.
Yeah.
Nope, you can't put Wu-Tang in a title
and have that song soft. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, when I clicked on that one on the playlist, I was like, okay, this is going to be different, and it was not what I expected at all. but what I will say is that sandwiched in between those two songs, it started from the bottom. And then, you know, you got Worst Behavior. And then you got From Time with Jane Aiko, which was a really good joint. You know, I don't know.
Pound
I feel
cake.
Like,
yeah,
Pound Cake, Too Much. You know, Too Much, I think, was a great song. The Language. And so he had, I think there were moments on there, even, you know, with Going Home Is What It Is, you know, it is what it is. You know, that's him trying to make it happen and do his singy thing. All Me, I mean, that's another one that, you know, I felt like I said, I felt like he had some, I felt like it maybe, you know, he kind of, again, I feel like he found that balance. I don't think his singy songy. I agree with you. I can agree with you. I don't think his singy songy songs were as good as his singy songy songs on Thank Me Later. Like the joint with Rihanna. That's a great song. That's a great song. I don't care what you like. That's a great song. So. You know, I dig it. I dig it. I felt like that one, again, more on the songs that I like on this one, I feel like he more solidified himself as more of a rapper and less of a pop artist. And that's why I kind of chose this one. You know, on the songs where he went hard as a rapper, again, Tuscan Leather, Started From the Bottom, Worst Behavior, you know, Pound Cake, I feel like those songs were better than the songs where he tried to spit on Thank Me Later. But on the flip side, the more poppy songs on Nothing Was the Same aren't as good as the poppy songs on Thank Me Later.
Well, luckily, I will not be listening to these back to back to verify or. Deny that is the case.
Go
so I'll just let that
you
one
go.
Back
to back.
I'm not going back to back on Drake. No, thank you.
What other albums did you give consideration in this short 5 years?
Good Kid, Mad City, and Teflon Don. Actually, Rick Ross's album. I thought kind of captured. You know, what the new... He's got a unique sound, but it's one that I think a lot of people try to imitate and pretty much trying to be larger than life, be like, have their street credentials really be verified. And on that album, he brought in a lot of folks that I think also typify that. So that had a lot of features from like T.I. and CeeLo's on that and Drake's on it. And Jay-Z's on, and it's like, okay, this actually really does, when I listen to that, I think about that time period, like, yeah, this really does kind of typify the way rap was for a 2 to 4 year period. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, Ross has just got his own stuff happening. He's got his own lane, and Drake is just everywhere. Drake's that dude, so.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I gave consideration to J. Cole's last one. And again, that to me that's his attempt at an Illmatic type of album. Where it's just him, and it's it comes off as really personal, but very grounded, very relatable at the same time. Good Kid, Mad City, obviously, for me, was up there. And it's one I like. Again, this is just where I'm at right now. It's one I like a lot. I don't know how impactful it is as far as where, because it's really recent. But, again, Dark Sky Paradise. Again, I think it's one that just people are, and it's today's kind of climate, but it's one of those I think we're going to look back and be like, man, that was a heck of an album. And that's Big Sean's last one that I find highly enjoyable. The other one that I did give consideration to that happened in 2010 was My Beautiful Dark Fantasy, which was Kanye. But again, I kind of felt like that one was a residual, a holdover from, the previous, because Kanye had to come hard because people were so upset about 808 and Heartbreak.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel like that one was a little bit an album he should have made 3 years earlier. Still amazing. Still an amazing album. But I feel like that one should have come. That one would have come a couple years earlier and was more representative of the previous era than necessarily where we're at right now. So interesting exercise. Interesting exercise.
Never want to do that again.
So what did we learn today? The 90s was chock full of good stuff. Really, really good stuff. And it was a schizophrenic era. Think about why do you think that was with the 90s? Why? Because I don't think when I was thinking about the 2000s, I don't think I think there's a definite vein, a consistent vein that runs through the 2000s, and I think there's a consistent vein running through now. Why was the 90s so all over the place, in your opinion?
The only way I could describe it is like I think it was the adolescence of hip-hop. So the 80s kind of was the birth. People talk about the golden age in the late 80s. And so they kind of set the standard for, okay, this is what an album should look like, and here's kind of what you need. Here are the elements for you to have a good album. But, if you take that, it gets interpreted in New York one way, it gets interpreted in Atlanta one way, it gets interpreted in Texas another way. And so each of those places had folks that maybe were just given opportunities to actually make music. And so, the commercialization of it probably helped a bunch of flowers bloom at the same time. Whereas, in the 80s, there were three, labels. And if you weren't in one of those three, good luck. Whereas in the 90s, you had more money being poured into them and kind of this this blossoming of in a bunch of different areas. Because that's really, it's geographic to me. I mean, New York has pretty, much, grimy in the early 90s, and then, Bad Boy kind of came in and Wu-Tang came in, and you had to pick sides. Like, you were with one or you were with the other. But it's when you look across the country that you see all types of things. I mean, soul food tripped me out, right, to have, because I thought, like, well, if you're not Public Enemy or if you're not one of these guys from that camp, you guys down south, you're just rapping about, whatever. You're just putting words right together, but you're not really teaching me anything. And then I listen to Soul Food, and I'm like, wow, these guys are preaching. They're literally preaching, right, on record, and it's soulful, and it's everything. And it kind of said, I said, oh, my God, like, this is crazy. I'm a better person for having listened to this album. And so that kind of turned me on to that, the whole Dungeon Family. And after that, I was hooked, So an album like Soulful coming out in 95, I mean, who could have predicted that? It was just unpredictable. It was an unpredictable decade.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, I liken it to the California Gold Rush in the, 1850s or whatever, 1840s or whatever. Everybody was looking to unearth that next big thing, And I think as the game has changed, everybody's looking to unearth the next big thing that was like the last big thing. Where I think then, you know, you had labels, as you pointed out, you had multiple labels and multiple avenues for artists to kind of get out there. And, you know, it was kind of like we were able to hear the diversity of the African-American experience across, or the hip-hop cultural experience across the country. Whereas I think after that period, it became an industry. And, you know, then it became, we're going to make it this way instead of finding those nuggets that they still exist today. And I think that's, you know, that's a pet peeve of mine when people say, well, it's so different now. It's, you just got to look a little harder, man. The internet's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
We got these things called computers. You know, you type in stuff and it gives you information. It's crazy. You should try it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people, I think that's the big, I think that's what allowed the 90s to be the 90s, that there were so many avenues. And the processes of getting it to consumers were streamlined enough where it didn't bog down and jam up the creativity of the artist, right? Like, I knew Tuesday Sam Goody was a place to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Tuesday, you knew where to get it. You knew how to get it. You knew when it was coming out. You had the sources and, you know, the rap pages and all those things that were giving you what was coming up. You knew when to get it. You could get it. There were several outlets of people putting it out. And so, you know, it wasn't this flooding, or there wasn't this, like, tight, you know, noose on the outlet only letting certain things out. So it was just different in that way. And I think it was one of those kind of, like you said, like you were saying about the basketball analogy, it's timing. And I think about that all the time. Like, I think certain rappers may have had better careers if they were rapping now, like Redman. I would love to have Redman out now where Redman could record a song today and it just be out, right?
Yeah.
I think sometimes Red was held back by the fact he had to put together an album, you know.
Yeah.
Even Method Man. Like, I want vintage prime Method Man in 2010 where he can just, again, wake up, roll out of bed, he got a studio in his closet, go in, fit some stuff, and just put that out. You know what I mean? It didn't have to go through this filtering mechanism that kind of evolved into the later 90s that I think, you know, when you look at albums like Dox the Name or Takal 2000, it's like,
yeah,
they're like six songs. And I would just like to hear those six songs over and over and over from you guys, you know? So, you know, timing is a big part of it, but I feel like artists like that would have been better served to be in this market. And there may be some artists, you know, today who would be better served to be – who would have been better served in another era where, you know, consumers would have had easier access to their music. But I would love to see guys like Meth and Red today as 22-year-olds with nothing to do but rap and smoke and see what they would come up with in today's climate, man.
That's ASAP. That's what you're looking at.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, I think of that and I say, like, okay, so that's, you know, one album that I listened to earlier this year, you know, the new ASAP Rocky, and I said, he's definitely on some serious drugs, but, you know, he knows how to make music. He's got an ear for putting these things together that's really unique. It took me a while to go to it because they just look weird to me. You know, just seeing them and seeing their videos, I was like, I don't know what the hell they're doing. But now I kind of see this guy really is just a creative mind. He's Redman, except he's in 2015. So this is what Redman looks like in 2015. It's ASAP Rocky. It's a dude that can do whatever he wants and makes weird kind of songs, but his fans and true hip-hop fans love his spirit, and they love, you know, they understand. And this is how it was with a Redman album. Like, you're going to sit through some songs and you're like, I don't know what he was going for with this song, there's like a verse or two that's dope, but I'm lost. And then he'll hit you with a song, what all comes together, and you're like, oh, this is great. And then it'll be a skit that's really random but hilarious. And, you know, and that's – it was like a movie, you know, listening to one of his albums. And that's kind of how I feel with – certain artists still have that vibe about them. And I think Kendrick is another guy that's like that, that does not make a linear album. He makes – or a formulaic album. He makes a kind of production, and it's got acts, and it's got – you know, intermissions, and it's got all kind of things that kind of keep you interested, but it's not a spoon-fed kind of music type.
Yeah, good point. Good point. So the last thing that we wanted to kind of, the last little bit of ground that we wanted to kind of cover on that sports fans, there are certain guys that become kind of iconic across hip-hop and sports. And Kobe Bryant announced that he was going to be retiring after this season. And Kobe's one of those guys who, you know, in the same sense where we would go to a barbershop and debate, you know, who our favorite rappers are, or, you know, sit around a card table and discuss, you know, who our favorite, you know, which MCs would devour which MCs. We do the same thing with our athletes and which basketball players, which football players are better, who's better. And Kobe is one of those guys who, again, came into the game in the mid-90s, has persevered multiple eras. And so, you know, I threw it out there. If we had to compare Kobe and his career to a rapper's career, what rapper would Kobe Bryant be? I'm interested to hear your selection. I'll go first on this one because it was my exercise.
Please, yes. I want to see what you were thinking with this question. Though I have good one. I got one that I think on multiple levels works. So I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. So when I think of Kobe Bryant, right, I think of a immensely talented individual who seemed to operate with a fanatical – kind of obsessive, giant king-sized chip on his shoulder. And that chip is what drives him to greatness. It also is what turns people off. It's also what makes him very difficult to work with. It's also what makes him likable to some. It's because he you know what you're going to get. You know he's going to go hard. You know he's going to put his heart and soul into whatever it is he's doing. He also is a guy who came into the game right out of high school. And he had to kind of earn his keep for a couple years. Then he had a larger star who he had to coexist with for an extended period of time. And he had some great success with. And yeah. Then there was a kind of a lull in his career. You know, people forget about some of those early aughts with Kobe after Shaq left. It was some lean years. When he scored 81, he had to.
Yeah, they only won by like 12. Yeah.
Exactly. So there were some years that were lean. And then, you know, he had a second act where he got around the right folks and reestablished himself as one of the icons of his era. So the person I felt like most the most similar comparison as far as a rapper would go was Kanye West. And, you know, even from the symbolic aspect of you got a guy going straight to high school and Kanye's first album is a college dropout.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just Kanye's obsessive desire to be great and how that can lead him to make some of the most rash decisions as far as PR that you can think of, and how some people it turns people off. But you can't – I've never heard anybody really argue with the product that Kanye mm-hmm. – and Kanye's ability to make an album and to put out a good album and no one's ever argued his talent, and I think Kobe's the same way. You can feel however you want to feel about Kobe. I have never considered myself a Kobe Bryant fan, but Kobe's ill. Kobe can play basketball, and that's something you can't take away from him regardless of how you feel about him. He's good. And then there's the 808 and heartbreak. And that coincides with Kobe's downtime, right? that going from being the golden boy, right, which Kanye had established himself after the graduation as kind of the next guy to grab that torch. He kind of, you know, him and 50 had that battle, right, where he killed 50. Mm-hmm. 50 wanted to put his album out on the same day, and he kind of said with a statement with the graduation, I'm that dude right now.
Yeah.
And then 808 came out. And for Kobe, it was the same. He was the golden boy, and then Colorado happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That incident in Colorado, and it totally switched the narrative on him. And it was a cloud that kind of he carried with him for quite some time. And, you know, again, around 2010, you know, he comes out of his funk with, you know, he gets Gasol, he gets Lamar Odom, Young Bynum, and, you know, his beautiful dark fantasy is realized, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's back on top. So that's kind of how I saw the comparison and kind of framed it up in my head. So Kanye West is Kobe Bryant, and Kobe Bryant is Kanye West.
Interesting. Yeah, okay, that's not who I picked. I guess the thing for me that doesn't match up is Kanye kind of lost it because of personal tragedy. You know, like his mom passed, and then he just kind of, you know, he was dealing with it on wax with 808s and all that stuff. Whereas Kobe's was self-inflicted. You know, Kobe drove Shaq out of there. And so while, you know, when I listened to 808, I was kind of like, oh, I don't like this very much. But you know what? I understand what this guy's doing, and I kind of feel for him. You know, I feel he's kind of lost, and he's like, I don't feel like rapping and rapping about sneakers. Like, I'm sad, so I'm going to make sad, sad music. So it's for that, because I thought about the Kanye thing, but I was like, I need somebody that's got a ton of hubris and, you know, and steps out and just kind of falls flat and then is blessed to run into somebody else to help him put it all back together. And I went back and forth with two, but the guy who I ended up going with, and this is going to probably surprise you, is Common Sense. And so... So here's my thing. One, you know, again, out the box, Common with Resurrection. I mean, the album was crazy, but, you know, he, because of who he was and where he wasn't considered a superstar, right? He was, oh, this is a good guy, and yeah, that's a critically acclaimed album, but, you know, no one's really putting you in any upper echelon. Early in his career, it was him with No ID. So I put his Shaq is his producer. So No ID was the guy that kind of found him and produced that album and One Day It'll All Make Sense, which were just great albums. Just, I mean, I could go on forever. Like, Common's first couple albums are like poetry. They're great. If you haven't listened to them, go right now, listen to them. And then he kind of broke away from No ID and said, you know, I'm big time. I can do this. I'm going to go off on my own. He kind of got with the Soulquarians, and he kind of started getting with Badu and got real weird and made Electric Circus. And that was terrible, right? Electric Circus was Kobe playing with whoever the hell he was playing with after Shaq left. With Brian Davis and, you know, all that stuff. So that was it. And then... Common runs into Kanye, so he has, you know, overlap with Kanye, and makes B, right? Which is, for me, Kobe got back with Powell and they won two chips, but no one is saying like that team was as good as the first team, Right, it was good, and congrats to you. Like, B was a great album, but B was not Resurrection. B was not One Day at All. Like, it just, he was a different guy. He couldn't do the same things he did before, but it's still really, really good, and he's still shown on it, and he showed that he's the man. The big reason why I had to choose Common is, since then, he's been pretty terrible. And that's a part that you have to connect with Kobe, which is, you have to compare him to somebody who, at this point, you do not want to hear come out with any new material. Like, I'm good if Common does not come out with another album. I just really don't want to hear it. I've listened to him, and, you know, he has flashes. Like, Kobe, every now and again, I have a step back that looks nice, but he's shooting 30%. And that's the same thing with Common now. So when I thought about, all right, good initially, lull, and then good again, right, which you kind of talked about, but then also someone who is probably an all-time great and really just is not doing it for you. And Common is an actor now, right? I'm like, just act. Just do that, right? And so that's why I compare him to Common.
I ain't mad at that. I ain't mad at that. You laid that out well. You laid that out well. I could appreciate that.
But it's got to be someone that's terrible now. It's got to be something. Yeah, Electric Circle was awful. But it's got to be someone that at the end is like, please leave. That is, and Kanye is not there.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right. And Common definitely is. I'm with you on Common. I love him to death. I love him to death. One of my favorite MCs, but I'm good.
Straight. Put a bow on that.
I'm
career.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally like, yeah, we're good. I mean, I think he came out with something recently, and I was just kind of like, never mind. I'm kind of like that with The Roots now, too. I don't know where you are with them, but I'm kind of like that with them as well. It's kind of like, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I'm okay. Yeah, I like what you did before.
Yeah.
I still have.
Yeah, they'll never, you know what I mean? They'll never be able to replicate it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, man, we've gone overtime. This is another edition of Hustle and Flows with Marcus and Sekou. We've had a blast chatting it up. We'll get another podcast on the calendar. I'll let you come up with the topics for the next one, my man. And you can put me through the ringer. I kind of
good.
You know, we challenge each other that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it's been great, man, chopping it up with you. I hope you listeners out there, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, Hustle and Flows on the Real Sports Guys Network. Make sure if you're not downloading the podcast, you can go to realsportsguys.com and download it. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Hustle and Flows. This is another extension of the Real Sports Guys Network. We keep growing this thing, and we're glad to have Sekou aboard as we continue to grow this. But this has been a blast. I'm enjoying this, bro. Until next time, we out.
Peace.